The sons of the Rosh, one can imagine, were raised on a different level, as one could expect from having a father like the Rosh. As a matter of fact, it was specifically emphasized by Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Arosh, who was the Malamokim of his father. He writes in a Tzvoah, the sefer called Tzvoas, Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh, he writes, Holchu bedrochov leshinu tamoy, that all the children, mamish, went bedrochov. There's a play on words, because the Gemara tells us regarding a posuk by Shmuel HaNovi, that Shmuel HaNovi's sons, the posuk says that loy holchu bedrochov. So here the Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh writes regarding the Rosh's children, offspring, that in fact that holchu bedrochov, they did follow in his ways. Leshinu tamay, they were not mishana. He was Rabbein Washer. This is a play of words. We find that Moshe Rabbein, when he talks about in the brachas, about Moshe Shemen Olachmoy, about the fat and the bracha and the blessings coming out of Osher, Rabbein Washer. It says, Yotsuru, he says, Nitzru B'chol Mishmar. They were kept watch very meticulously. Everything they do properly. Ekev Hashem Mitzvos of Shomar. And kept the mitzvahs appropriately, and so on. And so he goes on and on to point out, he says, how choshev and the Gedol Torah that all the children of the Rosh were. One can imagine that Chosman, that the Rosh was alive, everything really centralized around the Rosh. Because even though they were married, but nevertheless, any problem that they had, any suffix that they had, any shiloh that they had, who would they ask? Well, they had whom they asked. So they asked the father where was the Rosh. It's brought down so many of the different tshuvas. We find the tshuvas of Rosh, countless of the tshuvas that the Rosh answered, and he wrote regarding various shilohs that were asked by him by different children. But the children recognized, interesting, children recognized the tirdis, how busy the father of the Rosh was, because as mentioned alone, the Rosh actually wore many, many different hats and many, many different roles. Not only was he the chief Rav, you know, officially of Toledo, but recognized all over Spain. In addition to that, he was the Rosh Bezdin, and any things that came across, he was the Rosh Bezdin in terms of passing for any inyonim regarding Bezdin. He was the Rosh Yeshiva, and that's where the Tosis Rosh comes down, that we learn to this day, all the Tosis of the Rosh, that was the Derech HaLimud of the Rosh, and literally all the other worldly problems that came to him, came to his table, he didn't have a moment, and therefore to write even Tshuvas, he many times writes that were very difficult for him to have the time even to write. So interesting that we have quite a bit of Tshuvas that we do have. One can imagine the Mesiras Nefesh, and really very difficult to understand where he had the time to do it, because he does mention how difficult it is to be able even to write. There was no time to do it. And therefore, when even if his own children, I mean, they were forced, they had no choice, they had shilas, they had to ask him. So he found always that they would ask mechila. They would ask mechila from the father. This is the Hagdoma, before they actually presented the Shaila, when they wrote it in correspondence, they would ask Mechila, pleasure that they are bothering, they know that their father is so busy, interesting, son for the father, their own father, but they know that he was so busy with the problems of the Klal and the Tzibur, and so the Eloshin is, I just give an example, in the Tshuvas Eloshin Klal Dalad, Ona Adoyne Yovi, it's like a stranger pleading to his own father, Ona Adoyne Yovi, he says, please, Al Timna, do not hold back Milavirli Kol She Eloisai Beiratev. As if you'd imagine with the Rosh not answer his own sons, but yet this is the way they did not take it lightly. Even if it was their own father, the fact is that they felt sort of like guilty that they are bothering him more than he is already being bothered. So Ona Adoyne Yovi Al Timna, please do not withhold, refrain Milavirli Kol She Eloisai Beiratev. And then, Val Yichal Adoini, don't be upset. Shalom Achapam, have another Shalom. So don't be upset. And so on and so forth. Countless of times we find that, how they would ask Mechila from their father. And many times, we see that actually one of the sons of the Rosh had to ask a Shaila. He was forced, the only reason he bothered his father, so to speak, because he himself was a Rav of a Kehila, and the Bnei Kehila asked many, many times the same Shaila, and he didn't have an answer. So he was the son of the Rosh himself, so he had no choice, so ultimately he had to go and ask his father. So he points out and he goes to his father and he asks him again, he asks him Mechila that he's being matrich him for the tirde. So we see here in Klal Vov, we find this is the Loshen again, a son, one of the sons of the Rosh, appealing to the father of the Rosh, and he says as follows. He says, Sholali Adoini Ovimoiri Virabi, please forgive me. Please forgive me, he says. Please forgive me, Mani Matriach Olecho. Ki kei matridom alai, because I'm only bothering you because they're bothering me. So the Kehillah is bothering me, they need an answer. So I have no choice but refer to you. Mani Matriach Olecho, ki kei matridom alai, v'toyrihi v'lilmud anisorich. And push it, I need to learn. And therefore you're the only one who was able to teach me and so on. Another situation there was, another son of the Rosh, he felt forced that he has to go and refer to his father regarding particular Shiloh, and in that also there was a situation that needed very strong, there was problems in the Kehillah that somehow they were doing something that was not really appropriate, and therefore he needed the backing, the son of the Rosh needed the backing of the father to help him out with that. And he points out and he says to him, Shorali Adoni Yovi, again this is Klal Kufches, please my father be meichel me, Achani Matriach Olecho, Ki Rabu HaMisparzim, he says, Beneshek V'tarbis. He was a shy of people in Nichshon Lisa of Ribis, without a heteriski and so on and so forth, and so on. And this is we find all over the place. As a matter of fact, there was a particular situation where one of the sons of the Rosh appeals to the father because of the fact that he had sort of like a tremendous, up to a machloikis, a disagreement with one of the Dayonim. One of the Dayonim, actually on location, the son of the Rosh had a strong disagreement, and it led sort of like to a machloikis, but not a machloikis, personal machloikis, but it really became a very serious thing. So he asked Father the Rosh, you know, to take a look and to see what can we do about the Shiloh. Well, the Rosh says, guess what? You're talking to my son, but you're wrong and he's right. So, you see that the Rosh didn't simply lean towards his own negiyas that might have been to his own son. He was machriya like the other side, the mature of the Av, against his own son. And that can be seen again in the Chuvah Rosh in Klal, Ayin Gimel, and so on. The massive panosa of the sons of the Rosh, their Klal, was not great. Far from it. Actually, the only one that had a pretty, as we say, a pretty good panosa was Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh. All the others, even the great Balaturim, you know, who wrote the Torah, Rabbi Yankiv Balaturim, was very, very extremely, extremely poor. And we mentioned quite many shurim back. Remember the Loshen, he himself, where he brings and he writes in the Torah that I asked Adoni Ovi Yerosh Zal, Hilchei Shabbos, where the Gemara talks about where a person cannot afford to make Shabbos. So the Gemara talks about Asei Shabbat Chochoyel Valtistarach Lebriyas. So the Gemara says, okay, so you make a simpler Shabbos. Make a simpler Shabbos rather than putting yourself, into debt, because you want to make a very fancy, lavish Shabbos. Asei Shabbat Chochoyel. So make a simpler Shabbos Valtistarach Lebriyas. So the Balei Torah says, I asked my father, am I also included? Am I really poor enough to the point that Asei Shabbat Chochoyel? Unfortunately, he was not able, far from it, to be able to have his Shabbos table the way he would have liked to have it. So he wanted to know if he's already at that madrega, he's so far down below and destitute. And he said, V'loi onoli adoini ovishu, my father didn't answer me. So some say, Pasha, because the Rosh didn't want to say, you know, yes, you are that poor. The Rosh didn't want to say those words out, to say that to his son. So Pasha, he just passed on the shalom and he didn't answer him regarding that question. So this is a little bit as we see over here. Now, regarding the Rosh, being that this is for the season that we're talking about, so sort of like winding down regarding a little bit the hemshech of the life of the Rosh. Before the Rosh arrives in Spain, everything and all the achrayas that he carried in Germany, and with all the various sorrows that were upon him, and especially his Rebbe, the Maram Rottenberg, it took a toll on him. And it is mentioned that in Svarim, in early Svarim, that the Rosh sort of like aged a little bit prematurely. Was it for the fact because he just went through a lot, and there was a lot of sorrows that he went through. As a matter of fact, in Germany, he already lost one of his children. One of his children died, was a very young child. And this brought down the Shuvah Sarosh, Klal Chof Zayin, and also brought down the Tur. Mizvit the Tur lost a brother. the Torah lost a brother, and was a very died at a very young age. As a matter of fact, we'll quote the Lashon soon, but in the Torah when he brings it, he does not say who it was. All he says is, my father had to sit shiva for losing a family member. And he mentions it for a shaila, for a particular shaila, as we'll soon see, very interesting shaila. But it does not say who it was. But if you take a look in the Tshuva Sarash, it was a son, a young, very young son that the Rosh lost. And when he arrives in Toledo, right, he arrives with 8 sons and 2 daughters, unmarried. The Rosh in Germany, interesting, the Matzav Panosa changed from Germany to Spain. In Germany, it was doing okay. Remember, the Yon and Panosa at that time was money lending. That was the thing. The money lending to Goyim, and Goyim allowed to take interest from Goyim, Goyim allowed to pay interest, and that was a very common thing, if you know, in Jewish history, that the Jewish people had, this was a Panosa that they had of money lending. And so there was a Panosa there with that. It is said, it's mistaber, it's logical, because the Rosh ultimately, he fled, sort of, right? He fled from Germany, unnoticed, because he was worried that he himself might be arrested in the same way that his Rebbe was, not to extort money from the community for ransom. So the Rosh saw the handwriting on the wall and he left. So many say he left without collecting any of the debt, so he lost all his money. Because money lending is very good if people pay back, you know, but they don't pay back, so it's a one-way street. And it stands to reason that the Rosh didn't have an opportunity to wait to collect all the money that was lent out. So basically he left without the money that he had given and he had extended. And the point is that when he comes to Spain, and we said he had to marry off daughters, he didn't have any money. He himself did not have the money. Did not have the money to marry his daughters. So who helped out the Rosh? Who helped out the Rosh? Well, it was the son, sort of the Yosh in the family, Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh. Yehuda ben Arosh, he was doing okay, he was doing fine. So he was the one who saw in those days it was very common, you had to give a dowry. That was the mahalach that there was. Whoever had the daughter, had the girl, had to give a dowry. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh writes that I gave, he says, 1,400 gold, large gold coins, he says. He says, for the dowry of my sister. So it's written in the Tzvoas Rabbeinu Yehuda. And the Tzvoas Rabbeinu Yehuda writes that he writes, Ele v'aba mei zehuvim v'nasatim l'nesuei achoisi. I gave it in order to have my sister to be able to be married off. And it's brought down that when the Rosh was Nifter, the Rosh wrote a Tzvoas. We don't have that Tzvoas, but the Rosh wrote it. So what we know is because Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh, we do have the writings of Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh, that give us a lot of the things that we're talking about. This Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh himself wrote. And so the Rosh had a Tzvoas. And basically, he had a cheshbon of certain monies to be distributed to various tzedakis. That's what he learned in the Tzvoas. That kach v'kach should be distributed to various tzedakis. Rabbi Yehuda ben Arosh writes that when my father was Nifter, he sold all his furniture and everything that he had, it didn't amount at all to be able to be Mekayim his Tzvoas today, because there was nothing really there left to give. In spite of the fact, as you say, even when the Parnosos were very tough, he never desisted, never held back from giving Ma'aser, whatever, no matter how little he had. The Lashon is that he writes, is Shenahagu Avisenu Vavis Avisenu. He says Lahafrish Chelik Echad Masorah Chalokim Ligvay LeTzedokah LeSerach Mitzvah. So the Rosh always kept that, in spite of whatever the situation was. In Spain, there's another Nesoyin the Rosh goes through. He loses another son, a very choshev son, tremendous Talmid Chacham. His name was Rabbeinu Yechiel, named after his father. But the Rosh was Rabbeinu Osher ben Yechiel, which we spoke at the very first year. We talked about his father, tremendous things about the Rosh's father. So the Rosh had a son, which was named after his own father. And that Rabbi Yechiel died. They said that he was the most talented of all. The Balaturim speaks for himself. We know what the Balaturim is. They said that Rabbi Yechiel was the most talented of all the sons, and he died. He already wrote a lot of Svarim. This Rabbi Yechiel, we don't have those Svarim. And there's a lot of correspondence between him and his father, more than all the other children. And he dies very, very young. He dies in the year 1314. As the Rosh got older, a great man like the Rosh, his health became quite compromised. His health becomes compromised, and as a matter of fact, there was a tkufa that he was confined to a bed, something like 10 days, and he was so weak at the time, at that particular time, he was so weak, that even to write one tshuva, Right? One tshuva came about with extreme difficulty. And this we find written down in the Shalzei Tshuva Sarosh Klalam at Hay, at the end of Hay. He writes, Bezeyas Api, with the sweat of my brow, I was Moshe Nefesh, he said, to write the Tshuva. Because he excuses himself that, please forgive me that the Tshuva is not longer. I would have wanted to write longer. But even what I wrote, he writes, Bezeyas Api, that was with tremendous, he says, Mesiras Nefesh. It cost me a lot of koyach. And finally, after that, he was not even able to write anything at all. But it was by dictation. He would dictate, and he would only sign. This was towards the end of his life. As a matter of fact, is written, the Loshen is, in Klal Hei, the Rosh writes, and the Mem Gimel, Neum HaMetzava Lichtoif, this is how he signs, HaMetzava Lichtoif, the one that dictated, commanded to write, and he signs, Osher Ben Harav Yechil. So it was dictated, he had somebody else write it, but he himself signed it. So here we're up to, it was August 16, Limisporam. August 16, 1327, the Rosh loses his Rebbetzin, loses his wife. She was with him for over 60 years. Over 60 years, he loses his Rebbetzin. And interesting thing is, only 10 weeks after, the Rosh passes away also. The difference, the same year. The difference between him and his Rebbetzin was 10 weeks. 10 weeks. And we should just point out that regarding the year, there's a little bit some discrepancy, because we're saying it's the same year, because she was 1327. So if he was Nifter in 1327, then it comes out the same year. And according, the Rosh Hashanah is Tes Cheshvan. The Rosh Hashanah is after Sukkot. So Tes Cheshvan is the outside of the Rosh, 1327. And interesting is, there's no trace of any Matzeva, anything, of any of the Rishonim, nothing, we don't have. But there are references in Sfarim of a line or two. One of the lines on the Matzeva of the Rosh, it says, Ho Evan Ho Roisho, Shuas Chein Chein Lo. It's a Pasuk in Zechariah. Pasuk in Zechariah is Kapitel Dalet, talking about the cornerstone of the Beis HaMikdash. So in essence, what it was saying is that when the cornerstone of the Beis HaMikdash, V'hoitzi so Evan Oroisha, that's the Pasuk in Zechariah, that he will bring out the cornerstone, Chuas Chein Chein Lo, with cheers of grace, Gevaldik, we have the cornerstone of the Beis HaMikdash. In essence, this was written on the Matzeva of the Rosh, as if to say, this is the cornerstone of the Beis HaMikdash. The same Pasuk that was used describing the cheer for the cornerstone of the Beis HaMikdash was written on the Rosh's Matzeva, which was written, Ho Evan Horosha, Pasuk in Zechariah, Chuas Chein Chein Lo. And there are some historians that want to use a gematria, Chein Chein Lo, the words Chein Lo amounts to 93. Chein, 58, right? Lo is 35, amounts to 93. Well, 93, if you lay out the letters, Hey Pei Ches is 93. Hey Pei Ches. Hey is the year 5000, Pei Ches, right, the year of 82, which the year 5082 amounts to 1327. That's what I said. That's Shtikl Remes. So as we're mentioning, so the Rosh, as we say, he loses his Rebbetzin. He's Nifter. And the Levaya of the Rosh is described was an unprecedented Levaya. That's the way it is written from Sfarim going back hundreds and hundreds of years ago. An unprecedented Levaya. And it's brought down over here. It's brought down in a sefer called Seder L'Derech. It's brought down that they had a family plot in Toledo. They had a family plot in Toledo that the Rosh already had prepared while he was still alive. A whole area, a whole section. And one Matzeva covers both Kvarim. That's the way it was. One Matzeva covering both Kvarim. Him and his Rebbetzin. And you know what was written on it? You can see what type of a relationship they had. Those who were loved together while they were alive, but Moisam did not depart even in death. And the Hovim Bechayem, famous Posik, but Moisam lo nifradu. And this was the situation. No, but here's finally to mention this, that we know that Chazal tell us that even when Tzaddikim pass on to the next world, but nevertheless, they are aware of the fate, what happens later on with their descendants and with their children and so on and so forth. The Rosh also had to actually experience something even after his Patira. What did he experience? It was a tremendous gzera on the Jewish people in Spain. 300,000 Jews we're talking about. 300,000 Jews in Spain. And which was in the year 1491. It was a big Gzeret, 300,000 Jews. We know, of course, they were expelled. It was actually 1492, but started in 1491. And there was a lot of tzoros that Yidden went through. So you know what the Chachmei Toledo, it's a tremendous decision. The Chachom and the Rabbonim of Toledo at the time, they saw the tzoros. They said they were very afraid about the cave of the Rosh, that it might be desecrated. So they paskened that the Rosh should be moved. Imagine, the Rosh should be moved. We're talking about more than 100 years, 150 years almost, after Spetira, to remove the Rosh and bury him someplace else where no one will know his caver. And we talked, don't know. Kind of Eisnish. Nobody knows. So the Rosh was buried in Toledo in one place, which is not clear either where the first place was, but we did mention, maybe a year ago, at a different shir, but remember that in Toledo, I think it was one of the shiurim when we discussed the Ramchal or Rabbeinu Yoina, I believe it was Rabbeinu Yoina, because Rabbeinu Yoina also lived in Toledo. It was something that happened, it was quite a number of years ago, what happened, we'll discuss it later, but a couple of years ago actually, what happened was that a school, because when I was in Toledo, I really was trying to find, there was nothing there. I pushed away Mamish, I went for that reason. I wanted to see. Maybe someone can find us a trace of an old ancient Beis HaChayim, you know, that you can at least assume the Rosh is here, the Balaturim is here, you know. Rabbeinu Yoina is there. I mean, it's an unbelievable experience for me to it's electric. It's you can't describe it. But you couldn't find anything. They did a good job of wiping out everything, Mamish, wiping it out. If you go not far from Barcelona, actually, you know, farther from Barcelona where the Rajba was, you know, about a 2-hour trip. Today is a 2-hour trip by car, so you can imagine those days, you know, going by horse and wagon, and with those bumpy roads, who knows, could have been a day or two or more to get there. That's where Ramban lived. That's where Ben Yoin originally lived, in Girona. So Girona today, yesterday, that was 12, 13 years ago when I was there, they have a Nachmanides Institute of Jewish Studies, which means under Ramban, a Ramban Institute of Jewish Studies. Who are studying? Goyish professors, that one yid. The whole institution is not nobody. Who's doing the Jewish studies? The Goyim. Goyim Poshet, going delving into the past, you know, and the contributions that the Jewish scholars made, and you have names of streets, by the way, we still are named after Balaam Ukubolim, you know, you have Rabbeinu Israel, and so on, named after the Ramban, you have streets after Rabbeinu Yoina, literally, you have, because these were recognized, and these are the pillars, and the scholars are very proud of that, that they have an institute doing that. So they have some old Matzevis, which is all wiped out, you can't read the writing on it. So you can read the writing, but it's dated back to the Tkufa of Rishonim. So, but there's nothing, no place to go to any Beis HaChaim. There's absolutely nothing. So in Toledo, there's also nothing. And that's where the Rosh lived, as we mentioned. And Rabbeinu Yoina had a kavanah to go to Eretz Yisrael, so he leaves. He leaves Girona, right? He comes to Toledo, right? As a stopover. They didn't let him leave. Rabbeinu Yoina, great Rabbeinu Yoina, the Shaar Tshuva, right? Rabbeinu Yoina. So they keep him there, and finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a different plan, and he passes away. He's Nifter also in Toledo. So Rabbeinu Yoina is also there. So a school that needed more space wanted to extend the school to build further, to extend it. So they said, the school had property, and they had their own property. So they want to extend it. So they start excavating, and all of a sudden becomes revealed a few hundred kvarim that they never knew existed. A few hundred kvarim. Mamish literally could start excavating deep, deep, deep. They found a few hundred kvarim. And what they did was, believe it or not, they took them all out. And they put them in some sort of a, not a museum, but it was in a scholarly place where they want to study these bones and stuff like that. Nobody knew at first. Nobody knew. And then somebody, nothing's by chance, because Baruch HaMedet, we should find out about it, and realize it's a tremendous, what, such an avlet, who knows who's buried over there, you have no idea, you're talking about the time of Rishonim, who knows, so, it was tremendous demonstrations that came all the way from Europe, and from America, literally, it came from all over, and the negotiations with the ambassador of Spain here to the United States, finally, they were able to work out a system that the school should not really make the extension over there, and the atzomis and the coffins, whatever was there, were returned. So Kaponim, now at least you know, because of this accident, at least you know now, here is a mokim where there was was an ancient Beis HaChayim. We're going back to the time of Rishonim. Very, very likely that you have, who knows, you know, we're buried there. But the way we find that now, the Rosh Mistam is not there. Because if the Rosh was, if that was the real Beis HaChayim, but they unearthed them and they put them someplace else. Who knows where. But so this is, as I said, Rabbi Isai, talking about the life of the Rosh, and of course, his Torah goes on and on. So before we go to the Orchis Chaim, is the Rosh, we're starting Rosh anyway. So let me just tell you just a few little interesting things. First of all, in Hilchis Chalamoid, okay, in Hilchis Chalamoid, Simentov Kuflamates. So Chalamoid, basically the halacha is on Chalamoid, of course you have to refrain from doing malacha. Right now there are heterim to do malacha. The heterim basically are if it's a dover or ovid, which means it's a money loss. Not talking about prevention of making profit. Menias HaRevach is not called dover ha'ovid. Dover means losing that which you have already. So this is being extended somewhat. You have stores that are open because the cheshbon is, it's not just that you're not going to make more money if you're closed. The cheshbon is because customers will go someplace else. So you're worried about losing customers, which you already have, the customers you already have. In any case, so there are extended heterim and so on and so forth, liberally, in order to explain what dover ha'ovid means. If it's a real loss of hefsed moment, you're allowed to do malacha. So the shaila, the tour writes in Hilchos Chalamoid regarding, are you allowed to lend money for goyim for ribis? In other words, you're doing business on Chalamoid. You're doing business on Chalamoid. Halvoy beribis legoyim. Are you allowed to do it? So the Balaturim says yeshoyimrim. He says shedoyim elischayre. The Rai Yeshoyimrim says that it's also, it's like doing business, and Stamazoy not allowed to do business on Chalamoid. So lending money is a yeshoyimrim that it's also. But then he says, "V'kosar Rabbeinu Tam," the Torah brings. Rabbeinu Tam says that it's mutter. Why? This is not called business. Business is masa matin, give and take, buying and selling. Lending money is not bechlal the isur of schayra. Rabbeinu Tam says you're allowed to lend money, right? Lend money on ribis to goyim, so you're making money, yeah. But that's not the when the chachamim asked the isur of schayra. Schayra is buying and selling. But lending money, said Rabbeinu Tam, is not bechlal. And Roy ben Yodim nehagim heter. And most people, says the Torah, are noig heter. Ben Chalamoid, they lend money to goyim beribus. And says the Torah, aim beyodi leser. He says, you bring down b'shem the reeb. He says, we have no koyach. Rabbeinu Tam was matir, and most people are noig takel heter, and so on and so forth. So it's an interesting thing what he says over here. Anything the tourist brings down b'shem Rabbeinu Yitzchok. The Rabbeinu Yitzchok says, "I used to paskin that okay, I'm giving you a heter to lend money on ribbis and chalamoid, but you know what? But the first week, don't take interest for the first week. And that's for the you're lending the money, let's say for a few months, but don't take interest on the first week, so to speak, to preserve the chalamoid aspect. You take a lend the money out, but don't take any ribbis. He said the first week. So he brings down. However, he says." He says, this, my father, the Rosh, was Mekel on that. And he says as follows. Uba Ashkenaz, in Germany, how is he knowing in Germany? So the Torah brings down, Ba Ashkenaz, Hayorez Vashem, Yid was Yerushamayim, yeah, those who were Yerushamayim, Noihagin Iser, Bahalvos, Ribis, Lagoyim, Bahalamoid. In other words, in Germany, they consider this is Bechal Schoire. It's Bechal doing business. And then on Chalamoid, you don't do business. So in Germany, they were noig iser to lend money on Chalamoid, beribis, says the tour. However, says the tour, he says, my father said, but I was matir lahalvis legoyim, because this, in other words, the goyim that usually come, not for new ones, the usual customers. Shiragilim tomid lav bebesi, and he says, why? Because if I don't lend them, they're going to go someplace else, and I'm going to lose the customer. Interesting thing, Mamshu was saying. And then they're going to get used to someplace else, and maybe there's going to be a hefsid. So the Maisa, so the Torah here brings down, from Shuvah Sarosh actually, that Rosh was matir, considered to be a dover hovid, to do it on Chalamoid. So that's another psak here of the Rosh. Let me tell you here the one that we spoke about, that the Rosh lost a son, a young child we mentioned. This is in Hilchos Avelos. The Torah brings down your deism in Shin Mem Aleph. Listen to this. It says the following. Ra'isi, I saw, he says, Ladoini Ovi Arosh Zal, Shemesh Loi Mes B'Shabbos. Now we find out the child died on Shabbos. The child dies on Shabbos, so what does it make the father? He's a Noinein. until the kvure, one is an oinen. An oinen, we know, is potter mekola mitzvahs. An oinen does not daven. An oinen doesn't make any brachas. An oinen does not put on any tefillin. An oinen is potter mekola mitzvahs. If you eat, you don't bench. The only thing you have to do is, if you eat bread, you have to wash, but you don't make a bracha. Because an oinen is not allowed to do isurim. He just potter from mitzvahs. So to eat without washing, that he can. In any case, so an oinen. So he lost the child. The Rosh lost the child, a young child on Shabbos. Says the Torah, so b'motzei Shabbos lo himtul. He did not make Abdullah motzei Shabbos. Wash it. He's an oinen. He did not make Abdullah motzei Shabbos. Lo yispalel, he didn't daven. Lo yibayim rishim b'boiker, he didn't daven Sunday morning either. We're still before the kvurah. Well, acha shenigbar, but after the child was buried, right? He spalel tefillah shachris shadayin le'ovah zman. In other words, he buried the child early enough that the zman shachris was not over yet, and the Rosh davened shachris, right? Davened shachris. So he says, the question is now, do you make havdolah after the kura? Because you can make havdolah, someone didn't make havdolah Motzei Shabbos, you can make havdolah until Wednesday. You can make Abdullah until Wednesday. You can make Abdullah Sunday, Monday, till Tuesday night. You can make Abdullah. You can make Abdullah. So the Rosh Taki couldn't make Abdullah Motzei Shabbos because he was an Oinen. So, okay. So now Sunday is no longer an Oinen, right? A person can make Abdullah on Sunday.